This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Today, institutional investors are the primary enablers of dysfunctional corporate and market behavior. Institutional investors reward company executives for doing the wrong thing. And guess what? If you have very bright people rewarded very well for doing the wrong thing, they're likely to do the wrong thing.
What will it take to get the CEOs of the world's largest fossil fuel companies to wake up to the realities of climate change? Our guest this week on Sea Change Radio is Raj Thamathiram. He and his colleagues at Preventable Surprises believe that even small-scale investors can produce large-scale results by advocating for sounder environmental practices within the boardrooms of multinational conglomerates. Thamathiram breaks down his approach to investor engagement, known as the Forceful Stewardship Program, and maps out a strategy for companies to satisfy investors without putting the planet in peril. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Dr. Raj Thamathiram. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Preventable Surprises, which is a think tank that works on the role of institutional investors in preventing systemic risks. Raj, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Can you explain the Forceful Stewardship Initiative that you and your colleagues have set forth?
Alex, the Forceful Stewardship Initiative is based on the understanding that investors who are diversified in different sectors and different countries are already sitting on risk in their portfolios because of climate risk. And that's a bit like how investors were sitting on risk in their portfolios as a result of the way banks were operating before the global financial crisis. It's not measured, and so therefore it's difficult to manage in the traditional investment sense. But that risk is real, it's growing, and it's significant. And so what we're suggesting to investors is that they have a fiduciary duty to try to accelerate the transition to a low-carbon economy, which is the only way to deal with that systemic risk.
And explain how the 2-degree Celsius transition plans are an important piece of this puzzle.
So at the very important COP21 negotiations in Paris, the agreement was, and it was unanimous, that governments are going to try to move their economies to well below 2 degrees and keep that ceiling at 2 degrees. And therefore, it makes total sense for companies to begin to think about how they would make that transition themselves, how they would thrive in a world where global warming was limited to 2 degrees. Now, people can argue about whether it's going to happen, whether it's going to be 1.5, 2, 2.5. But the basic premise is that a well-run company should be thinking about how it will adapt its business model, how it will change its CapEx strategy, the capital allocation strategy, how it will change its remuneration to its chief executives, how it will change the lobbying activity that it does, in order to be aligned with a 2-degree world. Investors are totally within their rights to ask companies about how ready they are to do that. And, you know, having experienced the bankruptcy of Peabody, you can see what happens when companies are not ready to make transitions of this scale.
Perhaps you could tell our listeners why the Peabody Energy bankruptcy is important and what exactly happened.
The Peabody story is very important for the staff and the investors in Peabody itself. But it's also important because it's a bit of a canary in the coal mine about what could happen to the fossil fuel industry and indeed other sectors which are highly exposed to climate risk. Here you had a company which was very professional, one of the leading companies of its kind in the US and abroad, and it failed to see what was coming on the horizon in terms of growing regulatory challenges on pollution and also the changes in the pricing of renewables. it's very easy for organizations to get stuck in their goldfish bowl. And one of the ways to avoid that is to do scenario-based thinking about how transitions would happen. And we believe that had Peabody and other companies like it been thinking about making the transition, actually it would be much easier to be profitable in the new world. We're going to need fossil fuels companies for some time, so we're not saying they should disappear off the face of the earth instantly. It's just they need to make the transition to a different kind of global economy, which is much lower in carbon.
So Raj, maybe you can explain for our listeners what portfolio resilience resolutions are and how the activities like what you and your colleagues have engaged with, like in with ExxonMobil, for example, how that differs from picketing and other environmentally conscious activities that we've seen for 30, 40 years coming in a much less investor level base.
Alex, everything is needed. We're in a crisis situation, even though we may not recognize it. Hank Paulson, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, and then the US Treasury Secretary, who knows a thing or two about global financial collapse, says that it's our situation now on climate change is a bit like we're flying into a mountain and not doing anything about it. So everything is needed, and public mobilization and legislative pressure and media, it's all needed. One of the key things that hasn't happened to date is that there is a huge trillion-dollar gorilla in the room which hasn't really been brought into play. And that's the power of the institutional investors. I'm not talking about the specialist sustainability, SRI, green investors. They've obviously been involved in this issue for a long time. But I'm talking about the large mutual fund managers who own very significant parts of companies and have huge collective influence, the BlackRocks and the Fidelities and the Capital Internationals. Indeed, you know, the assets under management for BlackRock are equivalent to the GDP of Japan. Now, this isn't a technically accurate calculation because one's a stock and one's a flow, but nevertheless, it gives you size of the importance of these organizations. And if you think about the COP process, the negotiations in Paris, countries had to come and say what they were going to do to trigger the transition to a lower carbon economy. And in effect, what we're saying, Alex, is that large mutual fund managers also have to step up to the plate and say what they're going to do to make that transition happen. Our view, based on having been insiders within the investment system, is that the best thing that these large fund managers could do is to ask companies to disclose how those companies that they're investing are going to make the transition to 2 degrees. And they should do that across their whole portfolio, but obviously start with the companies that are most at risk and most problematic. So the heavy energy users and the heavy fossil fuel producers are key targets, but also the financial enablers of corporate activity, the insurance companies and the banks. So our proposal is basically that these very important fund managers need to get together and ask the companies in which they invest to start thinking in a very, very serious way about that transition strategy. Now, you might think this is pie in the sky, and indeed, some people have suggested it, but actually, what we're finding is that this is working. These resolutions have passed and indeed have been supported by management in large companies in Europe, BP, Shell, Statoil, BHP, Billiton. And coming up this year, Total is producing its first attempt at a 2-degree transition plan, the big French oil and gas company. And actually Suncor, the largest oil sands company in Canada, is also voluntarily agreeing with investors and going ahead and producing this transition plan. So what we're suggesting makes a lot of sense. It's also, incidentally, what the Financial Stability Board, the FSB Task Force on Climate Change, is asking for. They're suggesting that companies should produce their net zero transition plans as well. So we're very much in the mainstream. Now, the problem, it seems to be, at least at this moment in time, is that some very large companies in the US are not seeing this situation in the way that others are and are resisting making that change. And that's unfortunate, but it's something that will have to be overcome, and investors will have to overcome it because they are, in fact, the owners of those companies.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Raj Thamathiram. His company is Preventable Surprises. So Raj, it's funny you mentioned Suncor because I was about to bring that up. I spoke last year to a Suncor executive who said that while the management team there is totally on board with the realities of climate change, whenever they bring up ways to diversify Suncor's portfolio and look at a more long-term view, they get pushback from their investors. So this executive was kind of bemoaning the fact that the investors are the ones kind of steering them into looking at things in too short-term a viewpoint. And not only does their business model suffer, but the planet suffers as a result. Do you think that that's starting to change because of efforts like your own?
Alex, you put your finger on something really important, which is that, yes, today, institutional investors are, and we're quite blunt about this, are the primary enablers of dysfunctional corporate and market behavior. Institutional investors reward company executives for doing the wrong thing. And guess what? If you have very bright people rewarded very well for doing the wrong thing, they're likely to do the wrong thing. That's got to change. And part of what we're doing is putting the spotlight on institutional investors to get real, stop just talking about being long-term investors, and actually start to send signals through the normal routes. And one of the very normal routes is voting at AGMs. So it's not good enough to say, as many large investors do, we have a lot of influence, we're going to chat to management and trust us. I'm sure that some must be doing it. Who knows who's not doing it? But the aggregate result of it, it's not happening. So hence, we need to have votes. What you described at Suncor has happened much closer to your home. NRG had a CEO who was very proactive on these issues, and at some point the board and investors lost confidence in his investment plans. Now, I'm not commenting on the details of what happened at that company, but what we need is the largest institution investors, the big mutual fund managers, to get behind this transition idea and to back it from the top.
Can you maybe speak about the Southern Company's recent proxy battle? This is the third largest greenhouse gas emitter in the country, and a lot of people aren't aware of it, but this is kind of a shot across the bow in many ways.
It's a very interesting resolution from our perspective. A lot of energy and attention rightly is going into the large oil and gas majors, Chevron and Exxon, and the reasons for that are obvious. But we think there's an equally important case for investors taking the resolutions at Southern Company seriously. As you say, it's a very heavy emitter of greenhouse gas emissions. But also, as far as we can work through, understand through press and other reports, it's been quite active in the pushback against the US administration's clean energy plan. And that plan is critical for the US meeting its obligations agreed at COP21. And so what we're suggesting is that investors need to actually ask Southern what its doing about this coming transition? Is it on the right side of the transition, or is it, as many companies are, sort of ostrich-like in response to it and hoping that they can lobby their way out of change? That might work for a bit, but it's not going to work for long.
Would it be fair to hypothesize that, in a kind of an ironic way, these larger multinationals are under maybe more scrutiny when it comes to meeting a 2-degree transition because the rest of the world has accepted climate change as a reality, but there is a large swath of the American populace and I assume the American investor class which still has their heads in the sand. So these domestic-only companies in the U.S. may not be under as much scrutiny and not getting as much pushback as some of these multinationals.
I think you accurately identify a culture issue, and it's not just in the U.S., it's also in Canada. The CFA, which is the Chartered Financial Analysts Institute, did a survey of its members, and it was noticeable that North American CFA professionals, so fully qualified, very expert investment professionals, had a significantly lower assessment about the importance of climate risk to their peers in Europe and even in some emerging market countries. So there is a problem with the cultural understanding of climate change in North America. Interestingly, there wasn't a problem about investment professionals understanding general environmental issues. So there's something specific which is causing people an intellectual digestion issue here. That said, we just got to get over it. Professionals have to be professionals. Science is science. Policy is policy. We need to start to, as investment professionals, learn how to send signals which are good stewardship signals. And one of our senior advisors is, in fact, the former CEO and president of the CFA Institute. And he describes this push on 2-degree transition plans as really just simple good insurance to make sure the companies in your portfolio are thinking in the right way.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Raj Thamathiram. Has this been largely a grassroots campaign, or are you able to kind of inject yourselves into every level of management? It would seem that some of these fund managers, especially the mega fund managers, they may not be the easiest nuts to crack.
You know, the investment industry is full of very bright people who know they're very bright, and they're very well paid, so they must be very bright. And that is the nature of the investment industry. The good thing is we were also, Preventable Surprises, the staff and the advisors were also people from the industry. So we know the culture, we know the people, they're our friends and colleagues, and so we know how to talk to them. The issue is, will those who, at the end of the day, control the decisions, and by that I mean the asset owners and the regulators, will they act in time? By the way, no one doubts that we're making a transition away from fossil fuels to low carbon. You know, the G20 have agreed that we will do it by the end of the century. Privately, the fossil fuel companies know it'll happen a lot earlier, but they don't say that for reasons which you can understand. We think it needs to happen earlier than that. So all we're arguing about is how many decades are we going to delay the action. Our view is that the longer we delay, and it's not our view, it's science, the longer we delay, the bigger the risk to the portfolio and the higher the consequences to the end beneficiaries, who are the pension fund members and the insurance sector customers. So we have science, we have fiduciary duty, we have logic, we have good peer practice. It's all happening. So it's just a question of trying to get through that immunity to change, which we've seen on many issues, and it will pass, and the faster it passes, the better. And one of my requests, I think, and my interest in coming on this program is that the people who are listening to this show care by definition, that you know, that they're deeply concerned about these issues, and I'm sure are doing what they can in the rest of their life to minimize their footprint through the kind of heating and lighting they have and the food that they buy and the travel that they do. The unmet need is for people to express that need to their financial service providers, their pension funds and their investment managers. It's not a magic bullet. Consumer action is not the only thing that's needed, but it's a really missing piece of the picture.
Speaking of consumer action, I'd be interested in your thoughts, Raj, on the fossil fuel divestment campaign and where you see an overlap with your Force Stewardship Initiative.
You know, I've been working in the system for 15 years and raising this issue, and I have to say, despite being quite well thought of and relatively senior in my organizations, have had pretty marginal impact, and I'm known as one of the people who have more impact. The fossil fuel divestment campaign came along, and suddenly the issue is at the top of the agenda for all the investment firms. And I'm kind of sitting there and thinking, well, maybe, you know, there's something here. And so the more serious point is the divestment movement has had a huge impact in terms of sending a very positive signal to investors. It's helped to challenge the credibility of the fossil fuel industry, and it's really shifted a debate at the public level, without doubt. And those of us who've been trying privately and quietly behind the scenes to do it, I think if we're authentic, are suitably in awe of it. That said, the practical outcome of divestment is to move the ownership of greenhouse gas emissions from people who care a bit and sell their shares to people who don't care. Those people might be private equity fund manager, private equity investors. They may be sovereign wealth funds. They may be hedge funds or whatever, or index funds. And these people are very hard to influence. So, for example, today the U.S. tobacco industry is owned by essentially the kind of people that I've just been talking about. It hasn't gone away. Capital hasn't been withdrawn from the U.S. tobacco industry. It's just owned by different people. And so our strategies, whilst in no way sort of challenging the very important role of political signal sending, our strategy is different. And what we're saying is that companies in all sectors, and here this is another difference, we're not just focusing on fossil fuel companies, we're focusing on auto companies, insurance companies, real estate companies, aviation companies. All companies have to make the transition to 2 degrees, and that's what we're saying. And so we describe ourselves as a kind of third wave of investment activity.
Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu. This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to Raj Thamathiram. Can there be some kind of overlap for a listener who might be invested in one of these funds, or are they just too small? I think it's pretty interesting, and it's on your website, preventablesurprises.com. There's a posting about, I'll just quote it here. It says, it's interesting that the top shareholders of BP, Shell, and Exxon Chevron are largely the same. And you see overlap. BlackRock and Vanguard are in all of these. And then there's Fidelity's and Franklin's mixed in as well, and SSGA. If your finances are being handled by Vanguard or you're an investor in their mutual funds, what can you do? Can you make a difference?
You know, this is exactly the same question as democracy. Does your vote count? You know, you could argue, what does it matter? I don't matter. If I don't vote, it doesn't matter. And we all know the consequence of that, right? That's the status quo in the financial system today. We have no alignment between what's good for the end beneficiaries and how the investment industry really operates, whether it's on fees or transparency or a whole range of issues. Now, on this issue, we have a very simple process and one which is actually proven to work, which is to say, you, these large investors, have voted for this resolution at BP and Shell and Statoil. Why on earth would you not vote for the same resolutions at Exxon, Chevron, Southern, and all the other companies? And hold your service providers feet to the fire if they can't answer that question. Now, hopefully they will vote the right way because they'll know people are looking and they'll change how they normally vote. And that's the first step. And it's only the first step because that's a signal from investors. It doesn't force the company to do anything, but it's the start of a process. It's a, you know, in the investment and corporate world, when investors speak with a clear, coherent voice and ask the board to deliver something, it's a pretty bad board that ignores that request. And it will show. The next year, that report will come to the AGM. Analysts will be looking at it. If it's bad, it will be hammered in the press. It's the start of a process of change. And fundamentally, we are the end beneficiaries of it. We are the owners of capital. You know, Fidelity isn't the owner of the capital. It's all the tiny little people who invest through Fidelity who are the owners of capital. And that's what Fidelity and Capital and Vanguard and State Street need to understand. And that's why your listeners, I think, could be at the vanguard of this, if you excuse the pun, process.
Well, it's important work that you're doing. He's the CEO of Preventable Surprises, Dr. Raj Thamathiram. Raj, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Bar Kays, Taj Mahal, and Steve Earle. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.